Recorded live.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is Pastor Eli James with another installment of Christogenos, and I think we're up to part 18 already in our two seed line story. William Fink is with me this evening, and we're going to be discussing from this point on for the rest of the two seed line discussion the children of Cain and Esau, and the other part of the seed line. We've been documenting how the Adamites came through Adam and Eve, and how the Kenites came through Nahash and Eve. We definitely have two distinct seed lines of two different fathers, and last time we discussed super fecundation, which means that a woman can in fact have fraternal twins being inseminated by two different men in the same pregnancy. That's a real biological fact, folks. It's not fiction. Okay. And this evening we're going to be talking more about the seed line of Cain and Esau. And so, Bill, what is it that you want to be discussing this evening?
Well, we should discuss the Canaanites in brief, and then move on to the Kenites and the children of Cain of Esau.
Okay.
And I think that we could follow them pretty much through the Old Testament.
Okay.
And into the setup for the New Testament, which is in the prophets, Ezekiel and Malachi.
Okay. All right. What book of the Bible do you want to go to right now?
Well, last week we left off pretty much with Genesis 15:19-21. I don't know if you really want to recap that or not.
Well, probably should, because, you know, again, this is material that's really unfamiliar to most people. And I'm dialing up the, because we do want to document the fact that there are people known as Kenites. And here at Genesis 15, verses 19 through 21, these are the people who dwelt in Palestine before Abraham was told, and in fact this is what Genesis 15 is all about. Abraham is being told that his offspring, his descendants, namely the Israelites, would take possession of the land inhabited by these tribes, okay? The Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaims, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. And, of course, we've talked about several of these tribes in great detail, but these are basically the nations, the ten nations, which comprise the seed line of Cain.
Yes, and in the Judges story, in the conquest of Deuteronomy, in the conquest of the land of Canaan by the Israelites post-Exodus,
mm-hmm.
It's clear that they did not eliminate all these people.
That's right.
And they're mentioned very often in the Old Testament and in the New.
Yeah, one of the great stumbling blocks that the modern Judeo-Christians have over the Old Testament, the so-called New Testament Christians, is how in the world, how could a loving God want to exterminate a whole race of people, namely these Canaanites, you know, and they, I've heard them say things like, a loving God couldn't do such a thing, okay? But we understand that these people are actually literally the descendants of the devil.
Well, anybody that loves their creation has to hate when somebody comes along and bastardizes it.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened in Genesis 3. And it's exactly what happened in Genesis 6.
Right.
And it happened probably, according to the Book of Enoch and other apocryphal literature, even before Adam was put here in the first place by those angels who left their first estate.
That's right.
That they went out and they mixed their seed and the seed of every creature that they laid their hands on.
Right.
And that's attested to in apocryphal literature, but it's also alluded to very strongly in Jude and in 2 Peter.
Yeah, and when we discussed Genesis chapter 6, I quoted from the book of Jasher, which said very explicitly that the what was going on there was not only race mixing, but mixing the seed of various species. So what we got here is that these Canaanites are so evil that they're actually experimenting by trying to produce hybrid species, perhaps even slave species, and it's very evident that that's what was going on very much in ancient times before, the fallen angels. That's what these fallen angels were actually doing, is creating hybrid species and probably even using them for slave labor, kind of like what the Jews are doing to our people today.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the distinction of the races created by Yahweh is the love for Yahweh's creation. Racism
right.
is love.
Yes.
And race mixing is a hatred and a rebellion against Yahweh's creation.
Yeah. And it's always the Jews who are encouraging our people to do that. And what we're discussing here is the fact that the Jewish people today are actual descendants of these hybridizers, race mixers, and genetic experimenters. You know, and we have, example, Monsanto would be a good example of a Jewish company that's foremost in hybridization, okay, just like Cain was. And so we're seeing this entire scenario being played out one last time in the modern world. Yahweh hates hybridization. He hates race mixing, and the Jews are the foremost promoters of it.
Right. They're engaging in the same sin that their ancient past fathers did.
Yes.
When they mixed the creation of the original creation.
Yeah, and for those people who don't understand Two Seed Line, this is one of the essential teachings of Two Seed Line, that race mixing and hybridization are forbidden by God, and the modern world, led by the Jews, are still engaging in it. And this is the lesson that Two Seed Line is bringing to the world. You must understand this, that this is what it's all about, and that's what the Jews are doing.
Even in the Revelation, in the last book of the Bible, in the last book of the New Testament, fornication and race mixing are severely chastised by the writing of the Revelation several times.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And this is a beginning to end admonishment not to corrupt his creation.
That's right. That's right. Okay, I'm still having trouble with my switchboard. I'm trying to click on Southern California, and it's not working, and so I'm not sure if my...
Yeah, the TalkShoot server is behind several seconds.
Yeah, maybe. It's several seconds behind, but it's not responding at all. It's probably Gary, and it's not responding, so my apologies, Gary.
Can you hear me now,
Pastor? Okay, well, I can hear you, but my switchboard screen says you're still muted.
Well, the lady just told me that I was unmuted just now.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wish she would tell me.
Yeah, well, you only pay the bills.
Right.
Anyway, you guys brought up something very interesting. First of all, I want to share something I saw today. I got this thing from the YMCA, and, you know, they're trying to, of course, get us to join. And they showed this little picture of all these kids, one white girl and all the rest were
mm-hmm.
black and Mexicans.
Right.
I'm going, what did these contribute to anything?
Right.
You know, but then it didn't go no fun in there. But if you go, I think it's in the book of Jasher, you find out that some of the tribes were asking the tribe of Dan to help them battle the Canaanites.
Mm-hmm.
And the tribe of Dan said no, and the reason for that was out in the harbor, they had ships full of Canaanites they were using as slaves.
Okay.
And the kings of the Canaanites, this is not new,
mm-hmm.
were supplying them with all the Canaanites for slavery.
Okay,
So the tribe of Dan would not help them exterminate the Canaanites as commanded by our Savior.
Okay.
Now, this could also explain why the tribe of Dan is not talked about in the New Testament when it mentions all the blessings coming, because he was sort of rebellious in some ways.
Right, right. Here, let me...
All the tribes are rebellious. Everybody tries to make way too much out of Revelation chapter 7. Revelation chapter 7, that ceiling is in the distant past. And the 144,000 is a symbol that has another use later in the scripture. But Revelation 7, that ceiling is amidst the second woe, which is the fall of Rome and the invasions of the Turks
right.
and the Mongols into Europe. And that 144,000 is basically the guarantee that the children of Israel would make it through that second woe.
Well, regarding that episode in Jasher and the difference between, let's say, the Phoenicians and the tribe of Dan versus the rest of the 12 tribes of Israel, especially those who abode in ships. And, of course, Dan was the one that is most famous for living in ships. Well, wouldn't it be the case that the Phoenicians are really Israelites of the various 12 tribes that abode in ships?
Right. The Phoenicians were absolutely Israelites. If you read, it's not only Dan. Asher goes in the Song of Deborah, right after the mention of Dan abiding in ships.
Okay.
Asher is in his breeches by the seashore.
Yes. Yes.
The mainstream commentators try to say that the children of Israel stayed in the mountain, in the mountains, and stayed away from the shore where the Canaanites inhabited.
Yes.
And that's a total lie.
Right.
And it's practically the opposite is true.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because it showed that they were using the Canaanites for cheap labor.
Well, yeah, that's true. The Canaanites were used as slaves. That's, you don't have to blame that on Dan, because it's right in the Chronicles, and Solomon's building the temple, and right in that same period it says that Solomon enslaved the Canaanites.
Yeah, well,
it's explicit.
Yeah, the question is raised very often, why is not Dan listed there when the other tribes are?
And well, my point is that Dan never got deported.
Okay.
The children of Dan fled.
Yes.
Assyria.
Okay.
They fled Palestine in 770 BC when the Assyrians were invading, and that's exact time that the Tuatha De Danann appeared in Ireland.
Right.
Okay? The
tribe
of Dan stayed out of reach of the Mongols, the Huns, and the Roman Empire.
Okay.
The reason I brought this up is not so much that all that's going on, but I wanted to get into how the scriptures fit today. For instance, we took the Canaanites in for cheap labor. And as you shared, so did Solomon. So if we as the United States today doing the same thing.
Well, right.
Chinese got over here. That's how all the Mexicans are coming over.
Right.
It's not only that, but cheap labor has been our downfall all through history.
Right.
All right? The Mandingos were brought from northern Africa to work in the South African diamond mines, and look at what happened.
Right.
You know, cheap labor has been our downfall time and time again. It's nothing new, and it's nothing peculiar to today's age or to the age of the patriarchs. It's happened. The Nubians were used as cheap labor in Egypt. Look at the Egyptians today. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And then
why I just bring that up is to show why we keep getting in trouble is
right.
We keep bringing in this cheap labor instead of doing it ourselves.
Right, exactly.
Or somebody in the top brings them in so he can make more money is usually what happens because...
Well, usually that person, it's the bankers that urge that. It's the bankers
want
to do that.
That's
it's
right.
The bankers that urge the big three to do that back in the 30s and 40s to bring all the Negroes up from the South to work in the auto plants. And that way they would be able to get back at the unions, and it didn't pan out. Look, now the Negroes are making $50 an hour sitting on their butts.
That's right. Yeah, well, they're losing their jobs, too.
Well, yeah, and they're crying about that, and they're blaming people that don't buy American.
Right.
They sit around on their butts over here and collect money from the government.
Okay, all right, Gary. Yeah, it's obvious that these ancient violations of Yahweh's laws, we're still doing the same thing today. And,
that's what I wanted to speak about, so I'm going to shut up and let you guys go on.
Okay, thank you. All right.
God bless.
God bless. Okay, Bill, so where do we go from here?
Well, we could run down these. Last week we had discussed the Kenites and the other Canaanite tribes and how they had actually been the Hyksos that invaded Egypt. And they tried to mimic the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, we'll see how Kenites are masquerading as priests.
Yes.
When we get to the book of Malachi, the ability of the Jew to blend in with every nation and mimic the people of that nation and actually hijack cultures is eternal through time.
That's right.
That they've always had this ability all through time.
That's why they're known as parasites and chameleons, because
absolutely.
They have that ability, right.
Now, the Kenites don't disappear. The Kenites are dwelling amongst the Canaanites of Canaan, and a lot of the anti-seedliners try to say that, you know, they're pretty much forgotten back in Genesis chapter 4, and that's not true at all.
Well, they're forgotten by the anti-seedliners, yes.
Well, right. And we find Kenites are actually let off the hook, and we'll talk about the Amalekites in a little bit, but in the kingship of Saul, the children of Israel go to war against the Amalekites,
mm-hmm.
and King Saul warns the Kenites that are dwelling amongst the Amalekites in 1 Samuel 15:6, and tells them to depart
mm-hmm.
and get away from the Amalekites, lest he destroy them, the Kenites, along with the Amalekites.
Oh, okay. All right, because he was going to war against the Amalekites, and he warned the rest of them to get out of the way.
Right.
Is that okay?
Now in 1 Chronicles, in chapter 2, verse 55, we find that the Kenites are the actual scribes in Judah.
Mm-hmm.
They're hired scribes.
Right.
And scribes had a lot of, the scribes were the lawyers of the ancient world.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of power to usurp estates and do all kinds of vile things.
Yeah, they were often also in charge of weights and measures. And it is these very scribes that are accused of being the first ones to employ false weights and measures to take advantage of people and defraud people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, it's clear when the children of Israel were told to exterminate the Canaanites that they did not do that.
That's right.
That Judges chapters 1 and 2, they list the cities where the Canaanites were not destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're told that Yahweh suffered the children of Israel, allowing them to exist so that he could use them as a scourge against us.
Right.
And as a means of chastisement to us.
Yes, yes.
And nobody was chastised more by the Canaanites than Yahweh himself, than Yahshua Christ.
Yes.
And that's part of the redemption story also.
Well, but here, let me go into Deuteronomy chapter 7, where much of this story is told. And, Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 1, when Yahweh your Elohim shall bring you into the land where you go to possess it and has cast out many nations before you. Here we are, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you. Okay, now what happened to these other three? Because the Kenites aren't mentioned, and a couple of the other tribes. So these were absorbed by the other seven?
Right. As we've seen, the people are still there.
Yes.
The Rephaim aren't mentioned any longer.
Right.
In Deuteronomy 7. But it's very clear that Goliath and his brothers were Rephaim.
Yes.
The Kenites weren't mentioned in Deuteronomy 7.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very clear in 1 Samuel 15, as I just stated, and 1 Chronicles chapter 2, that we still have Kenites later. They simply lost their national identity.
Right, right. They were absorbed into the other seven tribes, or whatever was left of them. They were spread out, no longer living in the same territory as one unique tribe. Okay. Okay. Let me read verse 2. And when the Lord your God shall deliver them before you, you shall smite them and utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them, nor show mercy to them. Okay. Now, this is the one passage I was talking about earlier where your New Testament Christians cannot conceive of a God who wants to destroy people. But these people are the children of the devil.
Right, but they are the bastard tool. Or the, you know, if you're a cabinet maker and you make a cabinet with crooked doors that don't close,
yeah,
you just break the whole thing up.
Right, right.
And go
work.
Build another cabinet.
Yes, yeah. And since these are the illegitimate children of Nahash, and sons and daughters of race mixing and genetic experimentation, and who knows what was going on among these tribes because they're so evil, this is why Yahweh instructed the Israelites to exterminate them.
You know, Paul, talking about Jacob and Esau in Romans chapter 9, he premonitions the questioning of this very thing and
okay.
says, who are you, old man, to question Yahweh?
That's right.
That he has power to make both good
yes.
and bad from vessels from one lump.
Well, this is exactly the error that the New Testament Christians make. They think they're actually more compassionate than God himself.
Absolutely, and that compassion has always gotten us into trouble.
That's right, and they think they're smarter than he is, too.
In fact, compassion was probably Adam's sin.
Okay, there you go.
He had pity on Eve and accepted her anyway, even though she ate the fruit.
Right. yeah, well, I guess he really didn't have much choice after that. But here, let me continue, because these verses are really incredible. Verse 3, neither shall you make marriages with them. Your daughter you shall not give to his son, nor his daughter shall you take to your son. for they will turn away your son from following me, that they may serve other gods, so will the anger of Yahweh be kindled against you, he's talking to our ancestors, Israel, and destroy you suddenly. So isn't it the case then, if one of our daughters marries a Jew for his money, she's making a covenant with an Edomite?
Absolutely, and she's selling out her birthright like Esau did.
That's right. That's right. Verse 5, but thus shall you deal with them. You shall destroy their altars and break down their images and cut down their groves and burn their graven images with fire. For you are a holy people unto Yahweh your Elohim. Yahweh your God has chosen you to be a special people to himself above all the people that are upon the face of the earth. Yahweh did not set... Pardon?
And Peter repeats this in the New Testament.
Okay, yes, absolutely. Special people, holy people. Yahweh did not set his love upon you, nor choose you because you were the more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all people, but because Yahweh loved you and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn to your fathers, has Yahweh brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, which is the same definition of love that you gave earlier.
Absolutely. Love for Yahweh's original creation.
Yes.
Racism is love.
That's right.
And anti-racism is hate.
That's right, because it hates Yahweh's creation.
Right.
The
it
order...
hates God. I mean, who what greater hate could be than hating God and his creation?
That's right. That's right. Okay. All right, where do you want to go next?
The children of Esau.
Okay.
This is an important, I mean, I think we've discussed the children of the Canaanites last week. We established that the Amorites and the Hittites and the Israelites, or the Hebrews, were all together in the mountains of Canaan in Egyptian inscriptions as late as the 13th century B.C.
Yeah, okay.
This is well established, and it definitely coincides with the histories and supports the histories that are given in the Judges.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Esau, in Genesis chapter 36, he takes Canaanite wives.
Right. Okay.
And then he takes wives of the Ishmaelites.
Okay.
When he saw that his father didn't like the Canaanite wives, as and that's mentioned in Genesis chapter 28.
Right. Okay.
The Edomites, the notable, I mean, Esau's descendants are discussed at length in Genesis chapter 36, but the only really notable ones are Amalek and Teman. And okay. Of Teman, we see a city in Edomia, and it's near Petra. It's in the desert,
mm-hmm.
And that city is mentioned quite often in the prophecies. However, there's something that may help us date the book of Job. And that is Eliphaz the Temanite.
Mm-hmm.
Eliphaz the Temanite in the book of Job may well have been an Edomite.
Okay.
And if we know Job 42:7, Teman was the son of an earlier Eliphaz.
Okay.
Okay, so we have a connection here with the book of Job and the Edomites, which may help us date that book.
Okay.
Even though there is no indication that Job was an Israelite.
Yeah.
That he definitely lived in an earlier time than
right.
The Israelite nation was established.
Yes, yes. Okay, yeah. Well, he was certainly an Adamite and probably a Shemite or Japhethite. Probably a Shemite, I would think. I don't know if anybody's traced his actual lineage.
Right. But, it seems that he's a descendant of Joktan, but that's not that Jobab mentioned in Genesis 10.
Okay.
But that's not a guarantee either. And he could not be that Jobab mentioned in Genesis 10 if this Eliphaz the Temanite it is an Edomite, which certainly appears to be the case.
Okay. All right.
The Edomites refused to assist the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt.
Right.
They wouldn't even let the children of Israel, their own brothers, supposedly,
yes, exactly,
pass through the borders of Edom.
Mm-hmm.
We know the Edomites from later scriptures, from the Psalms, and from the apocryphal version of the book of Ezra. And this is, you know, the apocryphal 1 Esdras is basically a larger version of Ezra as we know it from our King James Version of the Bible.
Right.
And I believe that the book of Ezra in the Bible was probably redacted from 1 Esdras.
Yes. Okay.
In other words, the parts that the Jews were uncomfortable with were probably left out of it.
Right.
Because it's far too similar, and the parts that it has that are missing in Ezra just match perfectly with history and with other scriptures.
Okay.
The Edomites actually helped the Babylonians burn the temple and tear down the walls to the temple.
Okay.
When the last of the Israelites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, were deported by the Babylonians.
Right, right.
Psalm 137, 7 to 9 says, "Remember, O Yahweh, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it,
yeah.
even to the foundation thereof. O daughter of Babylon, who art to be destroyed, happy shall he be, and rewardeth thee as thou hast served us. Happy shall he be that taketh and dasheth thy little ones against the stones."
Mm-hmm.
And that sets the Edomites out right there as baby killers.
Right.
And they helped destroy the temple.
Yeah.
And they were happy that it was being destroyed.
Yeah, and the Jewish abortionists duplicate that today, don't they?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And every day they do.
Yes.
1 Esdras chapter 4, verse 45. "Thou also hast vowed to build up the temple," talking about the return to Jerusalem, "which the Edomites burned when Judea was made desolate by the Chaldees," or by the Babylonians.
Yes.
This is clear evidence that the Edomites were more than happy to destroy the children of Israel.
Yes.
In the 6th century B.C.
Right. And the prophecy, I forget where the prophecy is, but Yahweh says, if you do not destroy these Canaanites, they will come back and be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides.
Right, and actually that's in a couple of different scriptures.
And they have indeed been that.
That's in Numbers 33:55.
Okay.
"But if ye will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which ye let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your side."
Yes.
And that's talking about the Israelites when they were told to destroy all the Canaanites, but had too much compassion.
Right.
And couldn't do it.
Right, right.
Now, in Joshua 23:13, it's repeated.
Okay.
And it says just about the same thing of the main people.
Yes.
And it's repeated again in Judges 2:3, the same admonition.
Right.
And it's happened all throughout history.
Our people have difficulty killing babies and children. And that's probably why they couldn't exterminate all of them. But the Jews have never had that kind of compassion on our children, have they?
Absolutely not. And not even in 1 Samuel chapter 22, verses 9, 18, and 22 explicitly. There's a character that's first mentioned in 1 Samuel chapter 21. Where he is described as the chiefest of the herdmen that belonged to Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is Doeg the Edomite.
Right, Doeg.
Or Dog the Edomite.
Exactly.
Christ was slain by the power of the dog, so the name fits.
Yes, yes.
And Saul was looking for somebody to slay the priests of Yahweh because they weren't bending to his will.
Mm-hmm.
And Doeg the Edomite. Saul couldn't find a man in Israel to do it, and Doeg the Edomite was more than welcome to do it.
Right.
And he swayed 85 priests of Yahweh, I think it was.
Yeah.
I don't have the exact citation in front
of
me.
Yeah, which shows how wicked Saul himself was to hire Edomites to kill his own priests.
Right. And that's, I mean, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
However, to power and evil work hand in hand.
Yes.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Doeg the Edomite is also mentioned in the prelude to the 52nd Psalm, where he was described as having informed on David before Saul.
Mm.
And that's they're the only places that he's mentioned in Scripture.
Yes.
But we see where in Luke chapter 11, Yahshua Christ told the Pharisees and the Sadducees that all of the blood of all the prophets from Abel to Zechariah, their race is liable for it.
Right.
And he says their race, not their generation.
Yeah, and even if they weren't the actual executioners, they were, as you mentioned here, there's behind-the-scenes intrigue, sabotage, skullduggery.
All the time.
Yes.
And their ability to form conspiracies is evident right in the in the first chapter of the book of Matthew, or the second chapter of the book of Matthew.
Right, right.
Where immediately they were conspiring to kill the Christ child.
Right,
and,
right.
And they should have been, like the Magi, they should have been joyous at, at the news of his birth.
Right, right.
But instead they immediately conspired to kill him.
Yes. So the essence of what you're saying here is that the evidence that these Canaanites and Edomites have been around being pricks in her eyes and thorns in her side, saboteurs, instigators, conspirators, etc., etc., the Bible is absolutely full of this information, yet no mainstream Judeo-Christian denomination, or should I call them cults, bother to inform us of these things?
They won't follow these people through the Bible.
Right.
And it's clear that they exist in every book of the Bible.
Right.
This two seed line story, this enmity between the two seeds of Genesis 3:15, once you realize who Canaan married, who Esau married, where their descendants are, what they did while they sojourned amongst the children of Israel, it's incredible that people don't see this.
Right. Yeah, because They don't instruct their flock to read the Bible. Doesn't Paul say search the scriptures?
Well, even people like Ted Wieland or Ted Weenieland, who claims to read the Bible and denies two seed line.
Yeah.
Two seed line is throughout the entire Bible, and we're going to continue to see that.
That's right. Well,
I'd like to discuss the children of Belial.
Okay.
Because the word Belial and the children of Belial appear several times in Scripture. And the word Belial is often translated as worthlessness.
Okay.
And that's true. But anything that's worthless, there's a reason why it's worthless.
Mm-hmm.
And the word Belial in the Hebrew language and the word Babylon both come from the word Babel, which mean confusion.
Yes.
They're both related to the same word.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think Babel is actually rooted in Belial.
Yes.
And they're originally Hebrew words which are from roots which describe something mixed.
Okay.
Because something mixed causes confusion and it causes worthlessness.
Yes.
And the Strong's numbers pertinent to this argument are 894, 1097, 1098, and 1101.
Mm-hmm.
The mixed race children of Belial often cause trouble for the Old Testament Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
The NA27 also just simply, it doesn't translate, I'm sorry, not the NA, the NAS, the North American Standard, is that what it stands for? Version of the Bible, often translates Belial as worthless. But that loses the idea that it's worthless because it comes from something mixed.
Right.
In
Deuteronomy
13:3, we see that the children of Belial are leading Israelites away from Yahweh and into false religions.
Right.
Deuteronomy 13:13.
Yes.
Certain men, the children of Belial, are gone out from among you and have withdrawn the inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods which you have not known.
Yes.
Is this not exactly what the Jews do today?
It's called Judeo-Christianity.
Right. Exactly. And that's one of the other gods, and the others are secularism and humanism and socialism and communism and Marxism and every other ism they concoct.
Feminism, homosexualism. Yeah.
Right, absolutely.
Yes.
In Judges chapters 19 and 20, we have a terrible thing happen. A woman is raped and killed and taken right from her consort and raped and killed. And the children of Belial, certain sons of Belial raped and killed this woman who was a concubine sojourning through the land with her consort.
Okay.
When all of Israel became wroth at this deed because the man had actually cut the woman in pieces and sent her out throughout the land of Israel to show the children of Israel what happened to women in Benjamin.
Yeah, so
all of Israel
arrogant.
Became wroth at this deed and went up to the land of Benjamin to avenge this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the Benjamite protected the men of Belial.
Really? Okay.
And after a civil war, the tribe of Benjamin was nearly entirely eliminated.
Yes.
And this is, Benjamin made the serious error that all Israelites have always made. They made their allegiances along geographic lines instead of along lines of kindred or distinctions of righteousness.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Because that's what the Jews they love to blur this line today when they equate, they constantly equate anti-Semitism with anti-Americanism.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes,
and,
exactly.
And they fool the children of Israel in the same exact way that these sons of Belial had the Benjaminites practically get wiped out to protect them.
Well, they pretend to be Americans and confuse the American people and make them think that the state of Israel something has something to do with America.
Absolutely.
When, of course, it's not. You know, it's Jewish. You know, what do American people have to do with Judaism? Nothing. Yeah, so and that's
not
how,
a thing. I don't see one thing about Judaism in the Constitution, the Articles of Confederation, the Declaration of Independence, the Magna Carta. There's nothing about Jews in any of those documents.
But it's in Hollywood. It's in New York City, in the banking establishments. It's in Washington D.C. with all the, you know, the ADL, all the international Jewish organizations, the American Jewish organizations, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they're blurring distinctions of race so that we Israelites will not understand what's going on, and that's how they were able to foment World War I and World War II, pitting one tribe of Israel against another tribe of Israel, just as we see happening here, the Civil War that nearly wiped out Benjamin.
And I think the tribe was reduced to 500 men.
I think it was 600.
20.
I think there 600.
Was six, well, it's I mean, in numbers, they were tens of thousands.
Yeah, and they actually had to get their wives from other tribes in order to reconstitute the tribe of Benjamin.
Yes.
Amazing.
And that's the era that the children of Belial, or the children of mixed race, led them into.
Right.
So we see that these children of Belial are throughout the Old Testament and amongst the children of Israel and agitating and causing trouble. And we see the children of Cain, or the Kenites, in the Old Testament, amongst the children of Israel, they're there, and they become their scribes.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the Edomites in the Old Testament are adversarial to the children of Israel right to the time that the temple is burnt, and beyond that. But, I mean, it's well documented that the Edomites rejoiced when the temple was turned down.
Well, I guess, go ahead.
We have something that's very, very vague in Scripture, are the children of Judah's Canaanite son, Shelah.
Okay.
And they're mentioned in Genesis 38 and Genesis chapter 46. And these people, Shelah actually does go to Egypt with the Israelites, with the children of Jacob.
Okay.
And the Shelahites come out of Egypt with the children of Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And they're mentioned in Numbers chapter 26. They're counted in 26:20.
Okay. Yeah, so, but they're counted as a separate tribe.
Yes.
Okay.
And you know, there's a mixed multitude, and there's troublemakers amongst the Israelites all through the Exodus, and it's probably attributed in great part to these people that we have the 40 years in the desert of punishment.
Yes, yes.
Now, they're not mentioned again until 1 Chronicles, and that's their only other mention in the Old Testament.
Okay.
But we have something very interesting in 1 Chronicles 4, 21 through 23. The sons of Salome, and I'm quoting the Septuagint, the son of Judah, are the father of Lechab. So we see that Shelah had actually named one of his children after his brother
Okay.
And Lada, the father of Marissa, and the offspring of the family of Ethrabasas, belonging to the house of Asoba, and Joachim, and the men of Kozeba, and Joaz, and Sarath, who dwelt in the land of Moab, and he changed their names to Abderin and Athukim. Now, the Jews are always changing their names everywhere they go.
Right, exactly.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, the King James has something that the Septuagint has a little different. In the Septuagint, it says, these are the potters who dwelt in Akkaim and Gedira with the king.
Okay.
They grew strong in his kingdom and dwelt there. However, and those are two towns that are near the land of Moab.
Okay.
However, in the King James, it says, the sons of Shelah, the son of Judah, were the father of Lekah, and Lana, the father of Marishah, and the families of the house of them that wrought fine linen of the house of Ashbeah, and Jokim and the men of Kozeba and Joash and Saraph, who had the dominion in Moab.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems, if this is true, then this is the, one of the first instances. I mean, it's much earlier than the time of Herod, the king.
Yes.
Who was a false king in Judah. And this shows that the sons of Shelah are trying to stake a claim in that royalty that Judah has.
Right, right.
And they don't deserve it.
Yeah, and, I understand, too, that the Samaritans are actually partially descended from the descendants of Shelah. That the Shelahites remained behind.
Yes, they did.
When the Judahites were taken captive to Babylon.
Yes, that is true.
And they stayed behind, and those are the people that remained there and became known as Samaria.
Well, we're going to see that soon anyway in Malachi 1 and 2 when we discuss that.
Okay.
That's where we're headed. However, this, and I'd like to say something for the King James only crowd.
Okay.
That in the King James version of the Bible, at Genesis, at 1 Chronicles 4:21 through 23, it goes on to say that these descendants of Shelah, and it says, these were the potters and those that dwelt amongst plants and hedges.
Mm-hmm.
So the descendants of Shelah in the King James version of the Bible, they live in the plants and the hedges.
Okay.
And the truth is that these are actually names of towns.
Right.
Netaim and Gadara.
Yes.
And Netaim actually means plantings, and Gadara actually means a hedge.
Okay, yes.
But that they're not to be taken literally. They're right. Actually the names of towns.
Exactly.
That the Jews aren't running around living in the plants and the hedges.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like fairies and elves. Although
yeah.
That may be true, too.
We see that, and Shelah's descendants, it's very obscure. They're very obscure. They're the only references to them.
Yes.
After the book of Genesis are in Numbers 26:20 and in 1 Chronicles 4:21 through 23. And I looked with my search tools, and I really can't find another reference to them. There are references to Shilonites later in Scripture, but they're only the inhabitants of Shiloh.
Yes,
And that's, you know, the two words, Shiloh and Shelah, are very, very close.
Right. Now, did you quote a passage that said that they were good at weaving fabric?
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like the garment district of New York City.
Yes, it does. Except in the garment district of New York City, it's Irishmen that actually did the work.
They actually did the work, right.
You know, I mean, originally, and later it was Chinese, so
yes.
Whatever came along.
Yes.
But,
and the Irish are known for their fine linen, too. So it could be, you could be absolutely right. You had Jewish employers with pre-Irish people doing the actual work, and then the history repeating itself here in America.
Well, you know, that's very possible, and I'd like to bring something up now that you mention it. I just have to mention it.
Okay.
It's, you know, British Israel, the British World Israel World Federation, early in the 1900s, they sought ways to revise history in order to justify England's oppression of their, not only the Germans, but also of the Irish.
Right.
So they made this story up that the inhabitants of Ireland are named originally after Shelah's brother.
Okay.
And that the Irish are Canaanites.
Well, they couldn't have been named after Shelah's brother because he died and
well,
had no
right,
descendants.
But that's what they claim.
That's what they claim. Okay.
And it's just a fantastic tale that the British Israelites invented in order to justify the English persecution of the Irish for centuries.
Right.
And if, you know, they love to quote Bede.
Okay.
And if you read Bede, Bede in the 7th century spoke very well of the Irish.
Okay.
He loved the Irish.
All right.
And he actually spoke very highly of them.
Yeah, he loved the Germans, too.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
Yes, he did. And not only did he love the Germans, but he explained how the English are Germans.
That's right.
And I have this information in my on my website at Christogenia in Classical Records and German Origins, Part 6.
So how did the British Israelites get away with calling the Germans Assyrians?
Well, they would say anything because they didn't want to admit that England was slaying and oppressing her own brethren.
That's right.
Which is exactly what was happening.
That's right.
And British Israel was infiltrated by the Jews at a very early time.
Right.
And
right.
And the Jews actually basically set all that policy up.
Yes.
And used
yes.
British Israel as a propaganda vehicle.
And that's why British Israel teaches that the Jews are the tribe of Judah.
Right.
That's
and
why they teach that.
The sad truth is that they should wake the hell up and come out of all that.
That's right. That's right. They should. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Well, you know, when you're ready to discuss Esau, I want to go jump back to Genesis 26 to set
well,
this
let's
up.
Well, go ahead. Be my guest.
Okay.
Because, I basically said what I need to say about the Kenites and the Edomites and the Shelahites.
All right.
I can't. There are yeah. other things I can add from the prophets, but that time
yes.
will come.
But in essence, I think that our audience is getting the picture you know, that we want to paint here is that the descendants of the Kenites, and Kenite means descendant of Cain, you know, the hybrid offspring of Nahash and Eve, who was called Cain. He had more descendants, and they're called Kenites. And those Kenites survived through the various tribes that we've been, elucidating here and explaining their descendants. And Esau, as well as Canaan, were actually Adamic white men. They began as Adamic white men. Of course, Esau was Jacob's brother. Okay.
And Canaan was inbred, but he was still an Adamic white.
That's right. But both of those men married into these Kenite people, okay? And therefore, they were race traitors. They abandoned their own race and married into the Kenites, as many of our white brothers still do today. They marry into the Jewish race. They become our enemies.
Absolutely. And in as late as 1 Samuel, we see the Amalekites. Amalek was the son of Esau. And he was a half-breed himself, being part Canaanite and part Ishmaelite and
mm-hmm.
part Horite and
yes.
part Edomite. However, we see the Kenites are still amongst them in Samuel chapter 15.
Yes.
And Yahweh says that, I will make war with Amalek from generation to generation.
Yes, yes. And by the way, my screen is flickering, so I just can't, if anybody's trying to call in, I can't see you. So we're just going to continue with this program without any, call-ins. I just can't do it because my screen's going crazy.
Yeah, nobody's on the line.
Okay. All right. Now, in Genesis 26, the last two verses 34 and 35, it tells us this. And Esau was 40 years old when he took a wife, Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. Okay, now these Hittites are, in fact, Canaanite tribes, folks. All
right?
Right,
they're mentioned in Genesis chapter 10, and Heth is their progenitor, and he's a son of Canaan.
Right, okay, and then verse 35 tells us, which were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah, okay? So in other words, they did not approve of this marriage, okay, of these two wives. So we have very clear evidence that something is wrong with Esau taking these foreign wives. And as we know from Deuteronomy 23:2 and numerous other places, where we just quoted Deuteronomy 7, where we're told that our people are not to make any covenants with these Canaanite people. This is exactly what Esau was doing by marrying outside his race, okay?
And he was throwing his seed to Moloch.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They were sacrificing their offspring to the fires of Moloch, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I believe that means I have to follow Lamser in that. I think he's right about that. That is actually a metaphor for race mixing.
Okay. Yes, very good, very good. Okay, and then I'm going to jump to Genesis 27, 46, and 28, 1, to follow up this grief of mind of Isaac and Rebekah. 27, 46, and Rebekah said unto Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are of the daughters of the land, which, of course, Esau married, what good shall my life do me? Okay, in other words, Esau has destroyed his birthright, and I would be horrified if Jacob did the same thing. And then 28:1, And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, you shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Could it be any clearer?
Absolutely.
That we are not to intermarry with the Canaanites.
Absolutely. And that warning was issued by Abraham earlier than it was Rebecca.
Yes, yes. Now, I'd like to quickly jump to the book of Jubilees, because this explains, and the mainstream Judeo-Christians simply try to paint Jacob as a kind of deceiver and put all the blame on him for, you know, impersonating his brother Esau before Isaac to get the blessing, okay? But as you have pointed out a couple of times, that's just, you know, putting the seal on the deal, because Esau had, you know, he had rejected his own birthright, and this was just a formality of
right.
sealing the deal.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, in Jubilees chapter 35, I'm going to start quoting from verse 17. And Isaac said to her, that is to Rebekah, his wife, I know and I see the deeds of Jacob with us, that with all his heart he honors us. But I loved Esau formerly more than Jacob, on account of his birth. Okay, what does this mean? Because Esau was older.
Absolutely.
Isaac,
and as a father, I've had five sons. You always love the oldest one.
Right. Well, I mean, he was trying to honor the birthright. So whether either Isaac was unaware of what transpired between Jacob and Esau, that Esau had sold his birthright to Jacob, okay, and he probably, you know, because he was more concerned about Esau's bringing him venison than he was about the birthright, Isaac had his loyalty misplaced, okay? Now, here he goes, and he admits to Rebekah that he was wrong. But now I love Jacob more than Esau, because he has increased in evil doings, and there is no righteousness in him. For all his ways are injustice and violence, and there is no righteousness in him at all. And now my heart trembles concerning all his deeds, and neither he nor his seed shall abide, for they shall be destroyed from the earth, and they shall be rooted out from under heaven. For he has deserted the God of Abraham, and goes after his women, after uncleanness and after error, he and his children. Wow.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, that only repeats things that the book of Obadiah and other prophecies and Paul in Romans 9 also say those same things, just not as blatantly, I mean, not as bluntly.
Well, Obadiah is very blunt, but what isn't blunt is the Judeo-Christian ministers who never quote any of these passages.
Never.
Never.
And they refuse, you know, they don't even acknowledge the existence of Esau.
Right.
They don't have a clue, or at least they would never admit that the Jews of today are actually descended from the Edomites of the Old Testament.
Right, right. Yeah, and so if these people are to be wiped off the face of the earth, and there are several prophecies that put that happening in the end times, okay, then this has to be taken seriously. And it's obvious that mainstream Judeo-Christianity simply ignores this stuff. They totally ignore the book of Obadiah, which prophesies their utter extinction, okay, and many other passages having to do with that. And what are they doing? They're actually in league with the Edomites against Christ.
Absolutely, and against the true children of Israel, whom they only classify as dogs being thrown a bone.
Yeah, right.
Basically.
And so, in other words, by encouraging race mixing against their own race, they have actually gone in league with the devil and are the very Antichrist that they are supposed to oppose.
Absolutely.
This is the extent to which Judeo-Christianity has turned against Yahweh and against Yahshua. It is utterly amazing, folks. But Paul prophesied it in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. There would be a great apostasy, a great falling away from the true faith before the second coming. So, folks, it's here, and we're moments away from the second coming. It can't get much worse, can it?
Well, I'm afraid it might get a little worse than it is now.
Yeah, right. It's gonna. I have a feeling it is gonna get a bit worse yet, because we're starting to see signs of the civil war that is getting ready to happen between the Jew lovers and those of us who know what's going on, and we have to defend our race.
It's coming to a head.
Yes.
It just might be a while before it hits a crescendo, I'm afraid. I don't know.
Yes.
I'm not going to try to stick my neck out there with a time frame.
Yeah, right. Okay, so next we see the descendants of Esau. Where is that? Chapter 38 or 39? Where do we – the Dukes of Edom.
Descendants – that's chapter 36.
36, okay. Shall we go there?
Let's be my guest.
Okay. Now, these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. Okay, so make no mistake, those people we refer to as Edomites, and Pastor Comperé and Dr. Wesley Swift and many others always use the term Edomite Jew, okay, because the Edomites and Jews are the same people. Esau took his wives of the daughters of Canaan, Ada, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and Aholibah, it's in two different lines, hard to read.
That's Aholibama.
Oh, right.
That sounds awfully familiar, that name.
Yeah,
right?
It sounds like Holy Obama. The daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibion the Hivite. Okay, so we've got Hivites, and we've got Hittites, and we've
now,
got Canaanites.
I have to say something about this word Hivite.
Okay.
It is the same, the word Hivite should be Horite,
okay,
wherever it appears in the Bible.
Okay.
And we do not know any Hivites in archaeology.
I see.
But the two letters, it's the same era all over again, and it can be demonstrated. I don't have the verses off the top of my head.
Uh-huh.
But I can demonstrate that the letters were confused, the consonant was confused, just like the consonant in Edom and Aram,
mm-hmm,
in Deuteronomy 32:7.
Okay.
Where it should say, thou shalt not despise an Aramean.
Yes.
Or an Aromi rather than an Edomi,
right,
in Hebrew.
Yes, yes.
Wherever the Bible says Hivite, it should almost certainly say Horite.
Okay.
Esau went to dwell in Mount Hor, remember?
Right.
And the Horites are the Hurrians of archaeology,
uh-huh,
and they're very well known in archaeology.
Okay, so where it says Hivite, Hurrian or Horite should be read.
Right, and the vowel points, the vowels were filled in by the later rabbis of the 2nd, 3rd,
right,
4th century A.D.
Right.
And the consonants were confused sometimes. Those square Hebrew block letters, some of the consonants are indistinguishable.
Yes, yeah. And so this is another argument against King James only. You know, you have to ask the question, well, who are these Hivites? Can you tell us, please?
Right, and it's clear that the Hivites and the Horites are actually confused in a few places,
mm-hmm,
in Scripture.
Yes.
And the truth is that they should all be Horites.
Yes. Okay. And then going back, because this is confirmed in previous chapters of the Bible, previous chapters of Genesis, and Bashemath, Ishmael's daughter, sister of Nebaioth. Okay, so
there we have the father of the Nabataean Arabs.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. And so the Nabataeans, therefore, are a mixture of Ishmael and Esau.
And probably a whole lot of other stuff.
Yes, and probably your basic Arabs. And the word Arab means mixed and also means dark.
Yes, it does.
Yes, okay.
And the only way that people get dark is from getting mixed.
That's right. That's right. Verse 4, and Ada bore to Esau Eliphaz, and Bashemath bore Reuel. Okay, now, isn't it interesting that these Edomites and Canaanites always choose names for their children that are either identical to or similar to Adamites? Are they deliberately trying to confuse us here?
Right, but a lot of, you know, it seems to be the case, and it probably is to a great degree, because they try to mimic the greater culture. They always have.
Yes.
They've always tried to mimic the culture that they infiltrate,
mm-hmm,
as we saw with the Kenites going to Egypt, and all of a sudden they were dressing like the Egyptians and walking like the Egyptians.
Yes.
Yet again, they spoke the same language. So,
yes,
you know, they spoke a very similar dialect, and they would have had similar names.
Yes. Okay. And verse 5, and Aholibamah bore Jeush and Jaalam and Korah. Wouldn't this be the core mentioned? It's spelled C-O-R-E in the New Testament.
No, that Korah is actually the rebellious son of Moses, I believe, in the at Mount Sinai.
Oh, okay.
That
all
was
right.
destroyed.
Okay, these are the sons of Esau through Aholibamah, which were born to him in the land of Canaan. So we have a direct connection now here with these various Edomites and Canaanites and Hivites, which should be Horites, okay? And verse 5, and Esau took his wives and his sons and his daughters and all the persons of his house and his cattle and all his beasts and all the substance which he had got in the land of Canaan and went into the country from the face of his brother Jacob. Okay, so he separated from his brother Jacob. For their riches were more than that they might dwell together, and the land wherein they were strangers could not bear them because of their cattle. So there wasn't enough territory to hold both the children of Esau and the children of Jacob. Verse 8. Thus dwelled Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. Okay, so Mount Seir is where
it's
the
Petra.
Edomites. Yeah, go ahead.
That's the modern Petra.
Petra, okay.
It's basically a natural fortress from
okay.
which they raided the caravans for the next several centuries.
Right, right, okay. And so we find now, and this Mount Seir is directly south of the modern, well, I shouldn't call it modern, the eventual territory of Judah. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it's south and a little to the east.
Okay, to south and east of Judah, the land of Judah. Verse 9, and these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites in Mount Seir. These are the names of Esau's sons: Eliphaz, son of Ada, the wife of Esau; Reuel, the son of Bashemath, the wife of Esau. And the sons of Eliphaz were Timon, which you mentioned earlier, Omar, Zepho, and Gatam, and Kenaz. Okay, so what do we know about these sons of Eliphaz?
Not a whole lot. I mean, Eliphaz, the Timon has a city name for him later,
mm-hmm.
and the Temanites come from him, and that's that actually that's what I was talking about in the book of Job, where we have a later Eliphaz,
right.
who's called the Temanite.
Yes.
And he, you know, in the ancient world, the son was always named after the grandfather.
Right.
And,
right.
and the same name stayed in the family for many centuries.
Yeah,
and
so
that
this was,
Eliphaz the Temanite is evidently a later Edomite to me.
Right, yeah, so that would be this one right here that we're talking about. And perhaps this town of Teman was might have been named earlier, or this Eliphaz is simply called a Temanite because he lived in the town called Teman, okay?
Right, it could be this Eliphaz or a later one who lived in the
yes.
town of Teman.
Right, okay.
And Amalek is the only really other notable one here.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest kind of, I mean, they're generally known as Edomites for the next several thousand years until they become known as Jews.
Yes.
But Amalek is the only one that's really prominent in the biblical story after this time.
Yes. But the Bible is telling us very clearly, it's giving us these descendants of Esau for a reason, okay? It's not just incidental to the Bible story, folks. We have to keep the descendants of Esau and of Cain and of Canaan in mind because these are our historical enemies. They are the other seed line. That's
right,
who these
and this
people are.
Absolutely shows that Esau had a lot of children.
Yes.
And they went to Petra, to Seir, and they definitely grew and multiplied and are the Edomians or the Edomites of later
mm-hmm.
history.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of these tribes named after Esau and fathered by Esau, we can archaeologists can find out a lot of things about these people. And one of the things we have to understand is most archaeologists make no attempt whatsoever to differentiate these descendants of Esau from the descendants of Jacob. That's one of the reasons why there's confusion between these hook-nosed, receding forehead Canaanites and Edomites that are totally, and they're not Shemites at all, folks. These are your hook-nosed kikes, all right, that archaeologists falsely identify as Shemites.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the big mistakes these archaeologists make, okay?
And
of course,
I made an explicit example of that last week from Stacy and his comparison of the Amorites.
Right, right. Okay, I'm going to jump to verse 15. These were the chiefs of the sons of Esau, the sons of Eliphaz, the firstborn son of Esau, chief Timon, Chief Omar, Chief Zepho, Chief Kenaz, Chief Korah, Chief Gatam, and Chief Amalek. These are the chiefs that came of Eliphaz in the land of Edom. These are also the sons of Ada, and these are the sons of Reuel, Esau's sons, Chief Nahath, Chief Zerah, Chief Shamna, Chief Mizah. These are, I've got to separate the page here. And I don't know if it uses the term dukes in the King James, because they're typically referred to as the Dukes of Edom. And let me just jump down. Okay,
yeah, it's dukes in the King James.
Right, okay. All right, I'll just jump down to verse 19. These are the sons of Esau, who is Edom. Okay, so we can't make any mistake about it. It's been told to us several times that Esau and Edom are the same people, and these are their chiefs. These are the sons of Seir, the Horite. Here it's
It's Horite instead of Hivite.
Right. Who inhabited the land, Lotan and Shobal and Zibeon and Anah and Dishon and Ezer and Dishan, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So we are definitely being told, you know, that these people are alive and well, okay? And there's no doubt that throughout history, as you pointed out, they became the scribes attached to King David, King Saul, and various other kings, Solomon as well.
And they helped tear down the temple. They helped the Babylonians.
Right.
They stuck a knife in Israel's back.
That's right. And they've always
And they do that every time.
Yes. That was prophesied that they would do that in Genesis 3:16, I believe it was, where they would be like snakes in the grass, you know, waiting to attack us at every opportunity.
Right, and that's the enmity between the two seeds, and it comes out again and again.
Yes.
And when they could not face the children of Israel militarily and destroy them, they infiltrated. I mean,
yes,
they waited for centuries and infiltrated them and tried to destroy them.
Yes, yes. Okay, I'm just going to jump to 40, and I'll just read the last four verses here. And these are the names of the chiefs that came from Esau according to their families, after their places, by their names, Chief Timnah, Chief Alva, Chief Jetheth, Chief Aholibama, Chief Elah, Chief Pinon, Kenaz, Timon, Mibzar, Magdiel, Iram. These are the chiefs of Edom according to their habitations in the land of their possession. He is Esau, the father of the Edomites. Now, one thing that is utterly overlooked by your typical Judeo-Christian scholars regarding the intertestamental period is the fact that these Edomites, under Herod, took over the land of Judah and began impersonating the true Judahites of the Old Testament. And even to this day, these Edomites pretend to be Israel.
Well, that's where I would like to go next.
Okay.
And I would like to go to Ezekiel chapters 34 and 35.
Okay.
And discuss that.
All right.
Chapter 34 in Ezekiel tells the story of the lost sheep.
Okay.
My sheep have wandered over every mountain. Ezekiel is writing after most of the Israelites are deported.
Yes.
And Ezekiel himself was in the first deportation, the taking of the princes of Jerusalem,
mm-hmm,
away by the Babylonians.
Right.
Before they actually came and took the rest of the city also.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And Ezekiel 35, I can't tell if, I don't know offhand if it's written before the rest of Jerusalem is deported or after.
Okay.
But it's definitely written about deported Israel.
Yes.
When in Ezekiel 34 he explains, my sheep have wandered over every mountain. And,
right.
And that's
okay,
where the story of the lost sheep begins.
Let me just say that then he is among the lost, the so-called lost 12 tribes that were taken to Mesopotamia. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
He's not among
Mesopotamia.
Yeah, he's not among the Babylonian captives. He's among the 10 northern tribes.
Well,
here.
He was one of the, when the Babylonians first came into Jerusalem,
mm-hmm,
they took, I think it was 1,000 princes of the city. They're called the chief men of the city.
Yes.
The Babylonians took 1,000 of them.
Yes.
And Ezekiel is, I believe, amongst that
1,000. Okay. All right.
And so was Daniel. Daniel's ancestors, I think, may have been amongst that 1,000.
Okay.
Not Daniel himself, because I think he was born a little later.
Yeah.
But his ancestors.
Okay.
Now Ezekiel 34 tells about the lost sheep. And Ezekiel 35 and 36 explains that these same Edomites, later, the Edomites that helped tear down the walls in the temple,
right,
after Judah and Israel were deported, they later moved into Judah and Israel,
mm-hmm,
after the deportations of the Israelites were accomplished.
Right, right.
And Ezekiel 35, 10 to 12 states, because thou hast said, these two nations and these two countries shall be mine,
mm-hmm,
and we will possess it, whereas Yahweh was there, therefore as I live, saith Yahweh God, I will even do according to thine anger and according to thy envy, which thou hast used out of thy hatred against them. And he's talking to the Edomites,
mm-hmm,
who actually moved into Judah and Israel.
Right, yes. And he's talking to them about their hatred of Israel.
Right, and how they took what used to belong to the Israelites.
Yes.
So
yes,
we see 500 or 400 years later, the Maccabees go out and destroy and conquer the Edomites and force them to Judaism.
Yes. Well,
we see that this establishes this fact that the Edomites were in the land of Israel so that the Maccabees could do that.
Right. Right. Yes.
That's an established fact.
It's a matter of
Ezekiel and of 1 and 2 Maccabees.
Right. And in fact, this can be considered a prophecy of that event.
Yes,
that,
absolutely.
Well, King John Hyrcanus actually conquered the Edomites in the surrounding territory of Judah, but when he did that, he incorporated them as Israelites, which was forbidden by law. Number one, he violated Deuteronomy 7, which says we shall make no covenant with them. Okay, so he violated that law. He also violated Deuteronomy 23:2, which says we should not mongrelize our species, which he did when he did that too.
Absolutely, and the exclusivity of the covenants with Israel.
Yes.
And,
so,
you know, Malachi's writing must have been around and available at the time of John, at the time of John Hyrcanus.
Okay.
I mean, Malachi wrote, I believe the book of Malachi is written shortly after the return.
Okay.
To the rebuilding of the temple.
Yes. Well, let me just jump down to verse 15 before you go to Malachi, and he's talking again to the Edomites here. As you did rejoice at the inheritance of the house of Israel because it was desolate, so will I do to you. You shall be desolate, O Mount Seir, and all Idumea, even all of it, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. So Yahweh is prophesying that he is going to exact vengeance upon these Edomites at some point.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Now this, I would like to, this is important, and I would like, this sets to understand this sets all of the stage, the understanding of what needs to be really realized, truly realized, to understand the Christ's discourse with the high priests of the New Testament.
Okay.
And Malachi, this is a prophecy of Malachi, and I'm only going to explain it, but I'm going to read parts of Malachi 2.
Okay.
But in Malachi chapter 1, Malachi opens up with the exclamation of Yahweh's love for Jacob and his hatred for Esau.
Okay.
Now, this is not a mere transient topic in the prophecy of Malachi.
Right.
Rather, it's the theme of the first two chapters of Malachi.
Yeah, okay.
As chapter 1 proceeds, we see that Yahweh rejects the sacrifices of the priests because they are polluted.
Yes.
And this is, to me, I believe this is the same reason that Cain's sacrifice was rejected.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
Because these priests that are being talking about, they are not Levites.
Mm-hmm.
And only Levites could be priests, and it's only the descendants of Aaron who sacrificed in the temple.
Right.
But as we see, under Herod especially,
yes,
the priests are Edomites.
Yes.
Herod used the priesthood as a political tool, and put all his flunkies into the priesthood.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, so we see Yahweh distinguish between Jacob and Esau in Malachi 1 and reject the sacrifices as being polluted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Malachi chapter 2, we see that the attention is turned from the sacrifices to the priests themselves.
Okay.
And Yahweh warns that their seed will be corrupted and dung spread upon their faces.
Yes.
Now, that's pretty horrible.
Yeah, right.
Now, these priests being addressed are obviously not Levites.
Yes.
Because Yahweh reassures us in Malachi 2, verse 4, that his covenant is with Levi.
Yes.
So if he's assuring us his covenant's Levi, then these priests he's talking about can't be Levites.
Right.
These priests have rather, as Malachi says, as Malachi writes, departed out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Just as the Edomite Pharisees argued against Christ in John chapter 8.
Yes.
Malachi 2:10 shows the appeal to Yahweh from these polluted priests,
yes,
where they say, have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us? Why do we deal treacherously every man against his brother by profaning the covenant of our fathers?
Mm-hmm.
And in reply, another part of the problem is revealed to us by Yahweh in verse 11, where he says, Judah has dealt treacherously, and an abomination is
mm-hmm.
committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah has profaned the holiness of Yahweh, which he loved, and has married the daughter of a strange god.
Yes, yes.
Now, that means the Shelahites,
yes,
the children of Shelah, are the result of that daughter of the strange god, the Canaanite,
yes,
woman that Judah married.
Right.
Now, Yahweh then goes on to warn in Malachi 2:12.
Okay.
Yahweh will cut off the man that does this, the master and the scholar, out of the tabernacles of Jacob, and him that offereth an offering unto Yahweh of hosts.
Mm-hmm.
Here we see that these priests are unclean and their sacrifices are not accepted because they're not Levites.
That's right.
Yahweh's covenant is with Levi, Malachi 2:4.
Yeah, but they're not even Israelites.
They're Edomites, well, and they're Shelahite Canaanites.
Right, right. Well,
now, when we get to the New Testament a couple of hundred years later, mm-hmm. who are the priests that Christ is addressing?
You're right.
They're not Levites. They're
yes.
Edomites, and they're Canaanites.
Well, let me just go back to verse 4 because it underscores what you're saying here. Chapter 2, verse 4. And you shall know that I have sent this commandment to you that my covenant might be with Levi, says Yahweh of hosts. My covenant was with him of life and peace, and I give them to him for the fear wherewith he feared me, was afraid before my name. Definitely differentiating between the priesthood of Levi.
And that's the point I tried to make.
Right,
absolutely.
Versus the corrupt seed of verse 3.
Right. Yes. And the daughters of the strange god, the sons of the strange god.
Yes.
The children of Judah's relationship with the Canaanite woman.
Right.
And the children of Esau.
In verse 11, yes. Okay.
That's the whole context here.
Right.
Levi
yes.
against the Canaanites.
Yes.
Or contrasted to the Canaanites.
Yes.
And the Canaanite sacrifices are unclean, and they're playing the role of priests.
Right.
And they're polluted.
Well, one of the major admissions in Josephus is when he says that after Herod assassinated John Hyrcanus, then he opened the gates of the temple to the Edomites, and that was the first time that the Edomites actually were permitted to go, the Edomites themselves, okay, were permitted to go into the temple.
Absolutely.
But, yes, yes. And so, but they were not Israelites. And
absolutely not.
Yeah, and so, in other words, these Edomites, having taken over the temple, now are the reigning priesthood, and these are the very priests whom Jesus Christ, you know, criticized from one end of heaven to the other end of hell.
This is exactly what Malachi is prophesying
mm-hmm.
in Malachi 1 and Malachi 2.
Right.
And this sets the stage for the entire theme of
yes.
the New Testament
yes.
in Yahshua Christ's confrontation of those priests again and again.
Yes.
The priests of the temple are
right.
the literal children of the devil.
Yes.
And this is in the Old Testament, and it's prophesying the context of the New Testament.
Yes. And
clowns like Ted Wieland claim that there's no 2C line in the Old Testament.
Or in the New Testament.
He's just absolutely blind.
Right, right. Well, I don't know how you can interpret corrupt seed other than mixing your race.
Well, you know, Jeremiah said, and the words of Yahweh again in Jeremiah chapter 2, talking about Judah, though I planted thee a tender plant, how have you become a corrupt seed unto
that's
me?
Right.
And it's talking about the race mixing that occurred in Judah.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, the word seed has no spiritual connotation whatsoever. There is no such thing as spiritual sperm.
Okay. No such thing at all.
No such thing. There's no way to spiritualize these verses. We are talking about literal race mixing, plain and simple.
And you know, Ted Whelan may not be able to know the difference between a Canaanite and a Judahite.
Yeah.
But I'd like to quote Daniel in Susanna.
Okay.
In Susanna, there were a couple of men pretending to be priests, and Daniel labels them as Canaanites. I believe Susanna should probably be the first chapter of the book of Daniel.
Okay.
That it's in the Apocrypha,
yeah,
and it was probably left out for a reason.
Right.
Because Daniel identifies the parties. He knows who they are.
Yeah.
These two priests accuse this woman of unchastity because she would not sleep with them.
Right.
And because they couldn't have her, they wanted to spoil her name and have her stoned.
Right.
And Daniel actually revealed the fraud of these men, and in Susanna verses 56 and 57, Daniel, it said of Daniel that he put them aside and commanded to bring the other, meaning he questioned the two priests, and he got two different stories from
them
when he separated them, and
right,
said unto him, O thou seed of Canaan, and not of Judah,
yes,
beauty has deceived thee, and lust has perverted your heart. Thus have ye dealt with the daughters of Israel, and they for fear companied with you.
Yes.
But this daughter of Judah would not abide in your wickedness.
Yes. Well, a couple of things. Number one, the Jews don't want a lot of these apocryphal books included in their Masoretic text because they obviously talk about the differences between the races.
And they're the seed of Canaan,
yes,
not of Judah.
And they don't want us to understand that. That's why they exclude a lot of these apocryphal books. For example, in the book of Tobit, Tobit admonishes his son not to marry outside of his race. You know, so
absolutely.
But Judaism is race mixing institutionalized. That's why they eliminated these apocryphal books, because they clearly, you know, and in fact, you know, once we understand what we're talking about here in the Old Testament, and you know, differentiating the word seed and differentiating the Canaanites from the Israelites, we know that that race mixing is forbidden. But you know, since they have obscured all of this language. And I've read so many Jewish commentaries on Ezra and Nehemiah, not one Jewish commentator has ever mentioned the fact that those two priests told the Israelites, you must get rid of your mongrelized children, and you must get rid of your non-Israelite wives, or else you will be cast out of the priesthood. They never mentioned that fact, but it's right there in Ezra and Nehemiah.
You know, a Catholic priest will stand there and look you right in the eye and tell you that adultery and fornication are the same thing. And three times in the New Testament, Paul mentions them in the same sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't be the same thing.
Right, right.
And they do things like that over and over again.
Sure, sure.
They just made up a story and they run with it.
Right.
Because it fits into the corporate globalist agenda.
Well, that's what I was saying about the King James being a Catholic book. You know, with a small c, it's a universalistic interpretation. And the King James actually follows the Catholic tradition of universalism, okay?
It also rejected the real Protestant Bible, which was the Geneva Bible.
Right.
Which had some, the Geneva Bible is not an identity Bible, get me wrong.
No.
But it had a lot of value in the notes,
right,
especially in the moral codes and things like that
right,
the King James lost.
Yeah. And that was the Bible that the pilgrims brought with them to America. And the first prayer that the pilgrims said when they landed in America was they dedicated America to Israel. They considered themselves to be Israelites. They had that understanding. Okay? And that's been glossed over too. Okay? So, when we understand that the scriptures have been universalized, and that the racial distinctions that are inherent in the text have simply either been glossed over or have been, you know, universalized and forgotten and ignored, that's why Judeo-Christianity has corrupted Christianity, and it's become rotten to the core.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing good I can say about any Judeo-Christian folks. They're all corruptors of the Holy Scriptures.
It's not real Christianity because there can be no concord between Judaism and Christianity.
It cannot be. That's right. That's right. Because how can the religion that rejects Christ be merged together with a religion that supposedly accepts him? It's impossible, folks. It's ridiculous. There is no such thing as Judeo-Christianity. That concept is no older than the 1930s, when some Jew invented the concept to fool Christians into thinking there's a common relationship between the two, and there's none.
Well, I think we pretty well established the enmity between the two seeds all through the New Testament.
Yes.
And the fact that the Edomites would take over the land of Israel and Judah and infiltrate the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we're going to find out when we start to cover the New Testament.
Right.
And
right.
Two seed line.
Yeah. Okay. I see we've got about 5 minutes left. I just want to bring up one more thing about Josephus and false priesthood, this corrupt seed priesthood that took over in the land of Judah just before the coming of Jesus Christ. Josephus tells us that after Herod established the Pharisees as the most prominent and official priesthood of Judea under his reign, he sent away to Babylon for a high priest. Okay?
Yes, he did.
That's the first thing he did. So, in other words, there's your Babylonian Talmud, folks. That's where it comes from. Herod imported a priest from Babylon to instruct his priests, the Pharisees, in Babylonian tradition.
Well, you know, I got a couple of good quotes here.
Okay.
About Babylon. I just happen to have them at hand.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
In Brenton's Septuagint, Isaiah 13:22, Isaiah is speaking of Babylon. And he says, and satyrs shall dwell there, and hedgehogs shall make their nests in their houses.
Oh.
And, you know, that word satyr is onokentoroi, and it's actually defined by Liddell and Scott as tailless apes. Okay?
Okay.
Now, in Brenton's Septuagint in Isaiah 34:14,
yes.
He's not prophesying of Babylon. He's prophesying of Edomia.
Okay.
And devils shall meet with satyrs,
and
they shall cry one to the other.
Right.
There shall satyrs rest, having found themselves for a place of rest.
Well, now, of course, the satyr, S-A-T-Y-R, is symbolic of race mixing.
Yes, it's a half man, half goat, or right. I mean half Israelite, half Edomite.
Yes, there you go. There you go. Yes, yes.
Now, Baruch, the apocryphal Book of Baruch,
right.
From the King James Apocrypha.
Yes.
Take a good heart, O Jerusalem, for he that gave thee that name will comfort thee. Miserable are they that afflicted thee, and rejoiced at thy fall. Miserable, and that means the Babylonians who deported Jerusalem.
Right.
Miserable are the cities which thy children served. Miserable is she that received thy sons.
Yes.
For as she rejoiced at thy ruin, and was glad of thy fall, so shall she be grieved for her own desolation.
Right, right.
For I will take away the rejoicing of her great multitude, and her pride shall be turned into mourning.
Right.
For fire shall come upon her from the everlasting, long to endure, and she shall be inhabited by devils for a great time.
Yes.
And that's speaking of Babylon.
Right, right, right. And then, of course, you know, we see today, since America has become the habitation of devils as well.
Well, we are the symbolic Babylon.
That's right. And that's why we're in the shape we're in.
By many waters.
Yeah, that's why we're in the shape we're in, because the Jews have done to America exactly what the Idumeans did to Judea, and what the Jews have done to all of our civilizations going back to Adam and Eve, folks. It's the same story. The two-seed line story is absolutely verified throughout history, and we're talking about two different races. But the thing we have to keep in mind is the Adamites are a pure race, but the Jews have always been race mixers, and their chief weapon against us has been to get our women, and in other times and places, our men to race mix, thereby destroying our race.
which is what Daniel was talking about in Susanna,
mm-hmm.
when he said that they corrupted the they have dealt thus have ye dealt with the daughters of Israel,
right?
And for fear they companied with you,
mm-hmm.
meaning that they had sex with them,
right? Yeah, well, yeah, they were intimidated into doing so, or for whatever reason, doesn't really
yes.
matter. Yes, and in other places in the Bible, it's the sons of Israel who are tempted to marry outside their race. Okay,
all the time.
Yes, so,
all the time.
Yeah,
the Book of Numbers. It's the great plan laid out by Balaam,
mm-hmm,
and
right.
what he counseled to Balak to lure the men of Israel away with
right,
with
right.
their daughters.
Yes, and given and then we have the story of Phinehas, who ran a javelin through a race mixing couple, one javelin through both of them while they were engaged in the act, and that cured Israel of a disease that was running in the camp. So,
which was probably some form of fast-acting AIDS.
Yes, right, there you go. And so folks, this theme is repeated over and over again throughout the entire book of what we call the Bible. And so anybody who claims that this is a non-subject of the Bible simply has no idea what he's talking about. It is a major theme of the Bible, and in fact, from Genesis 3:15 on, it is not to be ignored.
Right. Two seed line is the enmity is the explanation of the enmity between the descendants of the serpent and the descendants of Eve.
That's right.
And no matter how many times these clowns want to deny that the serpent has seed, Yahweh said the serpent has seed.
Yes. Yes.
It's very plain.
Yes.
And he says it at both ends of the Bible.
Right.
Because
and
we're going to see that he says it again and again in the New Testament.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, so then let's say that today's episode concludes our discussion of Old Testament two-seed line, okay? And then we can proceed in the next installment to a New Testament two-seed line, okay?
I look forward to it.
Very good. All right, so I will be talking to you. Oh, wait a minute. Wait, I forgot. I'm going to be traveling to New York State next Friday, so you're going to be doing the show on your own next Friday. So
next Friday, I plan on doing an installment on the racial aspect of the parables.
Okay. Okay.
On Saturday, I will probably be with you in Binghamton.
Yes.
And
yes.
And hopefully Ken Gregg will fill in.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll see. Well, we're planning three episodes next Saturday, not tomorrow, but a week from Saturday. A week from tomorrow, it's going to be our conference, the Saul Paul Conference. And so I've scheduled three two-hour shows, and we'll see how actually 3 1.5-hour shows, and if they go a little bit over, it's no big deal. So a week from tomorrow, folks, we'll be on in the afternoon, and if Ken Gregg can fill in on Saturday night and do his own show, we'll see if he can do that. Okay.
Yes, and next Sunday, I already spoke to Clifton,
mm-hmm.
Clifton Emmaheiser about this. I'm going to do a program with Clifton Emmaheiser. And listen up, ladies, we're going to do the women in the genealogy of Christ. We're
okay.
going to discuss Tamar and Ruth
okay.
and Rahab.
Very good.
Primarily.
Excellent. Excellent. That sounds like a fascinating study. All right. So, and then tomorrow we'll be back with Yahweh's Covenant People, and we'll be continuing our series on the book of Romans. We'll be getting into Romans chapter 9.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'll be looking forward to it.
Very good.
Praise Yahweh.
Yeah, praise Yahweh.